In a world where you can do anything, why do we always do the same thing? Welcome to the ultimate crowdsource personal finance show. This is Choose FI.
You're listening to Choose FI Radio. The blueprint for financial independence lives here. If you're looking to unlock the secrets to financial independence and early retirement, you're in the right place. Stay tuned and join a community of like-minded people who are getting off the hamster wheel and taking control of their lives in the pursuit of financial independence. Choose FI, your home for financial independence online.
All right, guys, very excited about today's episode. Maybe a slightly cynical, but I would prefer to think of it as an open-minded question, a look at the choices that so many of us make without judgment, maybe a little bit of judgment, but really more just kind of a little pushback here. I think it's a great thought experiment. We're going to take a look at this like life choice question. And help me with this, I have my co-host Brad here with me today. How you doing, buddy?
Hey, Jonathan, I am doing quite well. Yeah, I'm sensing a Jonathan rant coming up. I'm just seeing it possibly coming here. I like the cynicism dosed very loosely with and liberally, let's say, yeah, with hope. That's what Choose FI is about. It's about taking action to make your life better, right? And I think what you're probably going to argue, and I don't want to get ahead of ourselves here, but is that you can think a little bit differently, right? You don't have to follow the standard path. And I think that at its heart, I mean, that is what we're doing. We're just saying with all of FI is take a step back and make decisions intentionally, right? It's not just following what your family has told you, what society has told you, what your neighbors do. It's about just being intentional about your life and making decisions from a place of strength as opposed to a place of scarcity. And I think when you can frame life like that, you have the power, right? You have the power in your court as opposed to some elusive they, whoever that random they is to you. Having the power in your court makes for a better life. It allows you to make decisions, like I said, from a position of strength. And we all want that. We all want that for our lives. And it truly starts from day one on the path to FI. It's about taking that first action to make your life better. I don't care what it is. I don't care what that better life is to you personally, but I care that you take action and I care that you're intentional. So, Jonathan, it's all yours.
I don't even think we've sold it yet, but I'm like, I'll just take what you just said, Brad, and we'll put that at the end of the episode. And I hope people hear that. And then everything in the middle hopefully supports this and that. It's basically nice. Good to go. But we dose this. There's going to be some cynicism here. It's going to maybe even sound a little bit judgy, just kind of warning people ahead of time. But I want you to know we're judging ourselves too, right? Like with what we're about to lay out, we also make the same choices as everyone else. But I think when all of us do 90%, right? 90% the same as everyone else. But when you look at the best parts of your life in some cases, and I'm looking at myself now, Brad, I think you might be able to identify this as well. Some of the best and most unexpected blessings in our life are when we made a choice that was slightly off the beaten path. Slightly off the beaten path, which is so interesting. It's so interesting to think about. And so now what we're going to do is we're going to take a look at the script, the standard narrative, the societal script that all of us have been handed. And at first you might not realize it. A lot of us think that we're forging our own path, but hopefully with the benefit of this rant that I'm about to go on, we'll notice that there are some common patterns that we all tend to fall into. We can start to analyze, what could we push back on? What could we change? Where are there opportunities for growth? Where could we bend the rules a little bit of what it is that we're going to have to do? So to tee this episode up, to really start it, I took a look at, you know, what is that standard path? And thanks to Urban Dictionary, I was able to find that the ideal American life involves 2.3 children, white picket fences surrounding a split-level house with a dog and a cat, and a station wagon or a minivan to take the kids to sports practice. So that wasn't quite enough for me to build the whole episode on, even though I know Brad spends a lot of time commuting back and forth to swim practice. So I thought I could like build out my own chart in 2 minutes or less of the life that most of us live. And I'm curious, as I say this, Brad, if I can see you already, you're like, oh boy, I'm curious how much of this.
No, you had me at 2 minutes or less.
He's like, can't do it. I have notes. It's the only thing that gives me confidence, but the timer doesn't start until I go. So I will say, all right, here it is. Go. Here's the script, Brad. As parents or as a child, you know, you want your kids to do well. So we got to get the kids into pre-K, right? When they hit kindergarten, we want them to really be ready. So pre-K, kindergarten, elementary school, middle school, high school. Okay. Now, maybe if we want to give the kids the best chance to be prepared for college or to outperform, maybe we even ensure their education by getting them into private school. All right. Now, at some point, they're ready for their first summer job. They're, you know, they're a little bit on the younger side. They don't have a lot of experience. So we get them that first job at like a fast food restaurant, something like that. They can get their first car. We're going to, you know, we want to do something on the budget side, but it still needs to be safe. We set them a $5,000 budget. And now this is you as an individual, right? And then now it's time for you to start getting ready for college. There's the college application prep. There's the college. There's the four-year degree. And then, you know, you realize that everybody has a college degree. So you really need to maybe spend an extra 2 to 4 years in order to stand out. So we're talking about a master's or a doctorate degree. Student loan debt is going to be needed, even though the parents have tried to do the smart thing and some scholarships are involved. We were able to keep the student loan debt down to $50,000, and that's really good. But maybe for some individuals, it's $100,000. But at least it wasn't any of that crazy $200,000, $300,000, $500,000 debt that we hear everyone else. We get our first career job at 23, and we get 3% raises year over year. At this point, it's time for our first new car. We have a job, you know, we're making that great college career income. We get our first new car and we go ahead and finance a $25,000 car. We rent for a couple of years as we learn the area, and then we lock in a 30-year mortgage at the age of 25. We're married by 28 and we have those 2.3 kids by 35 years old. We get our really, really big raise and promotion. We now are ready to lock in our forever home, getting the bigger mortgage. We're super excited when our net worth and our 401k hits $100,000 in our 401k at age 40. And we start actually getting a little bit more serious about finances. Our student loan debt is paid off by 45. It's time to upgrade the cars. We lock in a timeshare to make sure we're carving out that annual vacation that we get, that corporate vacation. We're able to take 10 days each year. At this point, we realize that our health has been kind of on the back burner. Medical issues are starting to arise. The stress is starting to get to us. We're starting to get lumbar issues and back support and visiting a chiropractor. Our weight's getting a little bit out of control. Our doctor's warning us about our hypertension. We're feeling like we just need to recharge, but there's not a lot of room. We're considering a career change, but we do need to focus on saving for the kids' college, balancing saving for retirement. We're starting to pay attention to those Social Security calculations. But you know what? Retirement at 65. At 65, we get off the hamster wheel. Now we can finally focus on our golf game. We can get our weight back under control. Maybe get the knee replacement that we've been delaying for 5 years. And now we have what society has set out for us, our golden years, to enjoy the typical American lifespan of 70 to 85 years. Okay. I mean, what do you think, man? Fair?
Yeah, I don't think that's unreasonable for a middle-class life here in the U.S. I mean, sure, there's some that's not going to fit for everybody, obviously, but that's pretty close.
All right. I mean, you and I probably go through a bunch of those. I'm like, yep.
Yeah, some of them, I'm ticking checkboxes off in my head.
All of us are going to have some of those. And there's very few individuals like, no, I didn't do any of that. But what's so interesting about it is if at the end of that, we're very, very happy, like that was it, that was very, very happy. I guess that's great. But we don't really know what our other options are because, again, everybody does this. This is what everybody does. We don't question it. We don't try anything different. And the people that do it aren't in our zone of awareness. The people that make different choices aren't really in our zone of awareness. Now, being in the financial independence community, you do stumble into people that make different choices, not all different choices, but at different points, like, you know, maybe that 65 is no longer the anchor point, right? So we're already, our orientation is maybe a little bit more open-minded that it's not just 65 year golden years. How can we reclaim, you know, the best years of our life? And look what that tiny little tweak, Brad, that tiny little tweak, how much of our life it actually gives us back. Like just that creates the space. And so if we recognize, okay, we question the standard narrative with that one aspect. When do I need to wait to reclaim, you know, whatever? I don't need to just reclaim my golden years. Maybe I should reclaim my best years. Maybe that's not where we should stop with the questioning. Maybe we should literally go through this in some varying degree, line item by line item, and say, what are my other options? Because we all, you know, we want the best for ourselves and we want the best for our kids. What are my other options?
Yeah, I think that that sounds very, very reasonable. And, you know, it's so interesting because even as you're talking, I'm thinking about the standard narrative for my own life. And this is even a FI life where theoretically I have options, you know, and I hear you say something like about your kids, you want them to do well. And what does that mean? What has that meant to me for my entire life, right? Like, what would I have thought my kids doing well was when I was 20, or, you know, my future fictional kids, you know, like, what were my aspirations at 18, at 20, at 30 now? And how have those shifted? And also kind of fighting back in a sense against like my own brain still tries to trick me even to this day, Jonathan. It's still, oh, wow, my kids do well in school. Where are they going to go to college? Right? Like, that is a hard pattern to break because that has been in my head for my entire life, right? I mean, we're talking 25 years. Doing well meant going to an elite college. And I don't genuinely believe that anymore. And it's interesting to see how like our own thoughts play into how we can advise our kids, right? How society and their friends' families impact them. Like, there are all these competing forces, of course. But it's kind of cool just hearing you ask that question and knowing that in my own head, I'm responding with, instead of just saying, oh, you want them to do well, and knowing what that narrative is, actually questioning it. And I think if I could put words in your mouth, the entire point of this episode is to take a step back and ask questions about your own life as the listener. You might love your life. You might have made very specific choices. Like, frankly, Laura and I have chosen the standard suburban life. Sure, we have a FI life. We have all this stuff. But right, Jonathan? Like, I see it on your face. Like, we have chosen the standard suburban life. And that is a very intentional choice. And I know we're giving things up. There's opportunity cost of what we're giving up for. We could travel anywhere. We could do anything, right? But we live here in Richmond, Virginia, shuttling kids back and forth to swim practice. And, you know, it's funny.
You say you've chosen it, and that may be a true statement, but, you know, my kids are younger than yours. And I'm wondering, is that my choice? Like, in a vacuum, without a conversation like this and without seeing other people having done other things, because again, I want what's best for my kid. It might have been, and it might be, but in my mind, I'm at a little bit of a fork in the road, and I've really gotten into just, you know, kind of virtually seeing the world. And I'm like, I want to take my kids to these places, and I don't want to be stuck in a big tourist trap taking that one picture that we'll look at in our scrapbooks. I feel very trapped. The last 2 years has made me feel very trapped in a specific zip code. And even when I think about maybe seeing the world and doing other things and being in a different place, it gives me stress with all the things that I would need to account for and figure out. And so the easy choice is to lock in these patterns. And we'll talk about that a little bit more. And it might be the best choice, but it might not be the only choice. And I wonder, with the benefit of a conversation like this, instead of saying, well, we are just going to do this, you know, we could actually start to open up. Well, what would it look like? Would we even want to consider this? Because, you know, you can't go back. You can't go back. But you guys, you have another decade with your kids before they're off on their own as adults. And you're saying, okay, now for the past decade, which was wonderful, shuttling the kids to, and I'm getting, Brad, you may be locked in on this, but for the purpose of this thought experiment, all right, for the last 10 years, we've done this. For the next 10 years, my last 10 years with my kids, your best moments, and I know this for a fact, are the time you actually get to spend with them on your 1 month a year. And you have a very long, extended, luxurious 1 month a year. What if it were 3 months a year? What if it were 6 months a year? You know, what if you could have more of those moments? Would they still do well? Would you be robbing them? Would they be hurt? And let's go through this again. Let's start at the beginning here. So going back to as a child, think about how much of that standard narrative, that standard societal script involved your kids are in school, or you are in school, pre-K, kindergarten, elementary, middle, high school, college, and then on the back end of college, career, but paying off the student loan debt, right? Like, basically from 5 years old to 40 years old, your time and your life energy is either going to learning something or paying off the debt that was associated with the learning that you got. That's a lot of time actually wrapped up in that. A lot of people say, well, yeah, but that's just what you do. But I think there's two points to consider. One is that that has been the case for the past 100 years, but it has not been the case for all of time. That is what we consider the norm right now. And then point two, what if you had to? We all had a very standard script that was handed to us and we accepted. And then just like that, in March of 2020 of last year, suddenly the entire educational model flipped and had to pivot. And suddenly it was slightly different. Suddenly it was remote. Suddenly we had to make accommodations. Suddenly we considered homeschooling. Suddenly everything changed like a dime. And suddenly what you knew would always have to be, because you had to in this one scenario, you made a plan. You made adjustments and you realized, okay, I guess my kids aren't locked out of the system because we had to make a pivot. I guess the system worked around them. And so, you know, Brad, that was like, for me, just watching that, not just as an individual, but as society have to pivot, what other opportunities does that open up?
Yeah, you're right. I mean, it really was an accelerator. Obviously, none of us would have wished March 2020 and what's come on the last 18 months and the world, obviously, but you've seen things accelerate that theoretically people always talked about work from home, right? And remote work and what that looked like. But yet people and companies and decision makers were afraid to make it happen, right? Oh, what's going to happen to productivity? What's going to happen to camaraderie? All this stuff. And then, as you said, but what if you had to, right? That is a really cool question for everybody to hear out there, is, but what if you had to? And I think you can probably extrapolate that into a lot of aspects of your life. Think about how what you do, what you have to do around your house or in your job, it always swells to fit the time you have. And no matter how much time you have, an 8-hour workday and you get done, you were busy the whole time, theoretically, right? Quote unquote busy. But I have no idea what I did in those 8 hours. But what if you had to fill that into 2 hours or 3 hours or 1 hour? What would that day look like? And I think that's, again, a cool question to start this whole conversation. But what if you had to? But what if you had to not have in-person jobs or in-person school? Or what if you had to? What if somebody said, you absolutely have to take the next year and travel? Jonathan, I know that's what you're thinking about, right? As you just kind of alluded to, like, where would you go? What would you do? How long would it take you? But what if you had to do this in 2 weeks? What would that look like? Could you make that happen? What would you have to set up? Like, actually take the thought experiment down to that level. I mean, we actually met somebody, I think I alluded to this on a podcast episode previously, but I met somebody at a Chooseify local meetup here in Richmond who was all set. He had all his ducks in a row. He had just retired, somewhat standard retirement, a little bit on the early side. His wife was retiring, or is retiring actually next month in August. And they are not tied to their house. They're basically ready to go and they want to travel, but something is holding them back. And I kid you not, Jonathan, they even know where they want to go. They want to go to Portugal, but something was holding him back in terms of just taking that next step. And it was as simple as going into an expat group on Facebook and just asking a question of, hey, where can I rent short term until we figure out the city? I kid you not, Jonathan. Like, it was unbelievable, this interaction I had with him. And I basically forced him. I said, right, like, hey, you are going home tonight and here's some accountability. You need to email me tomorrow morning saying that you posted in this Facebook group. Just, hey, this one question, that one thing was holding him back. So slightly off topic, but it just reminded me, like, what if you had to take action today to make your life a little bit different? A pretty cool jumping off point.
You're right. I've got the wanderlust a little bit, right? So I'm like, and not just for me, but for my kids too. And one of the things that I was thinking, well, you know, I can't travel because we actually got the studio set up here that I've already set up, and we've got, you know, we got video, and I couldn't take it. And I was like, well, what if I had to? It'd be easy. The video is, I'm sorry, everyone. I know maybe you're watching this on YouTube. I don't care about the video YouTube channel. Like, really, it could not be here and we could just do audio, or it could be audio on YouTube only. And I could take one mic, plug it into a laptop, pull it out of the bag, and we could do it if I had to. If it was really important, if I wanted to, we could 100% do it. You could make a plan around that. You're like, well, you know, my kids are in school and I can't, because both my kids are in school. We can't pull them out. You know, kids get attendance awards and they sell it. Well, you know, like, you get attendance awards and, like, you know, you never missed a spot from kindergarten to elementary school to, and I'm sure there was that person that was in middle school that had a family reunion coming up and didn't want to go to the family reunion because it would mean that they would miss and lose their perfect attendance record. I'm sorry, who cares? Who cares? It does not matter. We just skipped a whole year. Everybody who was perfect for 8 years just had to take an entire year out of school. The whole thing is meaningless. It doesn't have anything to do with a life well lived. the attendance score. Like, let's just throw away stuff that doesn't matter. At some point, we got to look at Maslow's hierarchy of needs here. This is what you need, like want versus need, right? You need shelter, you need food, you need security. Now you could, you know, if you go to the second layer, we could say, well, we need transportation and clothing. Both of those support the top three, right? They support the top layer. And then if we build this out, everything goes from there. A lot of us focus on money, and I have no problem with money. I'm a big fan of earning more money because money allows us to quickly and easily navigate the top three, shelter, food, security. You know, but ultimately, if you're just being more creative, you just need to sort for those. And so if you're like, okay, those three are sorted, all these other things that I'm saying I have to do, I think it's time for us to like take a look at those through Maslow's hierarchy of needs. Do they support shelter, food, security? And if not, do I want to do those? What is my motivation from doing it? Am I doing that out of enjoyment or am I doing it out of fear?
Yeah. And it actually ties in to what you were saying about Choosify, right? And the video, like what's the minimum viable? That's how I keep thinking about these decisions. Like what's the minimum viable for whatever, like for the amount of items I own, for the Choosify podcast? Like you said, you have this great studio over there. Like I've been there once in the last 18 months. You know, we used to do these great videos together, but I mean, who cares at the end of the day? The podcast is coming out. We're like, if you had to travel, like you said, you could have, if you really wanted video, you could buy a $100 webcam. You know, I'm sure you have, knowing you, you probably have a handful of them squirreled away in your house somewhere. but what is minimum viable? And the same with regular work. Is minimum viable going into a plush office in a city somewhere? Or is it, hey, I've got a laptop and I have an internet connection and I can still do my job? That's what I love about this, is that it's just a little bit of rethink. I think about this with all the possessions, even though, Jonathan, you know, I'm at heart a minimalist. If you come into my house, I mean, we have a regular suburban house. We have a pretty big house now. I've talked about how we actually moved to a larger house. And while the possessions haven't swelled to fit it necessarily in the traditional sense, we still have a lot of stuff. But when I'm going away in August, you kind of alluded to that month off. We call it my red X month, where we put a big red X across one of the months on the calendar and just take it off. I mean, what I have basically is my clothes, a laptop, and the only creature comfort I have is my noise-canceling headphones, which at this point, I pretty much can't live without those. But honestly, there's not much else I personally need to live a satisfied life at this point. I'm with my family. I'm doing things. I mean, obviously, the undercurrent of all of this is we have resources, right? We have money. We have time because we've been on the path to FI. And so I'm clearly not overlooking that. I'm not saying I would be fine with a suitcase and a laptop and no money, right? Like we have been on the path to FI. We've been saving money my entire adult life, nearly 20 years at this point. And we're now at the point where you can look at, hey, what is that minimum viable for X, right? For happiness, for my job, for connecting with friends, connecting with family, for whatever. Like, I think that's what I'm coming away from. Just this whole thought exercise is, what are these questions I can ask myself, right? We talked about, but what if you had to? Now this minimum viable, like it's a jumping off point for you, the listener, to say, hey, take a look at your life and what does it look like now? But what if you had to? What if you had to downsize? What if you had to get rid of 80% of your stuff? What if you had to only work 2 hours a day? What are the important aspects, the truly essential aspects in your life? I think that to me is just a cool thought exercise, Jonathan. And I got to be honest, like it's just like we always talk about, sometimes we drift, right? Like I drift as much as anybody else in terms of, hey, I think I have it locked down. And then I look at my life and I say, kind of sliding backwards and not really being optimized or not looking at this essential, this 80-20 analysis. So I'm benefiting from this as much as the next guy. Anyway, I'll be quiet now and let you
rolling. I think the point is to stretch us, right? Like it's an interesting conversation. It pulls you a little bit almost too far in one direction. So you can like take the one or two things that work for you. I hope people take it that way as opposed to anything coming from a place of dogma. But I mean, to stretch you, to stretch me, to force us to say this out loud, this thought that maybe we've been thinking about, but we haven't really put any time or energy into fleshing it out, and then say, okay, from this, did that move me in one direction or another? The point when you were mentioning your minimalism, it wasn't to say to anybody, you will own nothing and be happy, but rather to say, do you own your stuff or does your stuff own you? You know, is the stuff that you've made the decision to purchase, is it giving you more options or is it limiting your options because you're afraid to leave your house because you couldn't have it anywhere else? I think a lot of us, when we think about, well, okay, we're in here, we're in this city. And a lot of us, again, going to this, you can do anything, but we all do the same thing. We all go to the cities. We all end up in these kind of different metropolitan cities. We think about the world being very crowded, but really, when you really look at it, there are cities that are very, very crowded. And then there's a huge world out there with tons of options. And so then going back to Maslow's hierarchy of needs, we need shelter, we need food, we need security. I literally see news articles on Google on the daily, probably Google suggestions, their algorithms, telling me about a town in Italy that will pay me to move there and give me in my own place. Like, it'll pay you $5,000. Come live here.
But I've seen that. It's like 30 grand over X number of years or some such. And there's houses in Japan that they're giving away for either $0 or $1 or something like that.
These are ghost towns, right? I mean, you can, the whole world is out there. You need to be able to solve for shelter, food, security, you know? And so then, okay, well, let's look at the problem a little different. Let's take a look at all of these things that we just lock in. If we need shelter, food, and security, what are the underlying skills? And again, I'm not encouraging anybody necessarily to get these skills, but just to understand it, because it allows you to look at the problem a little differently. All right, I'm sitting on a plot of land that I've been given by someplace for free because no one will go here. I need to be able to build a shelter, build a house. I would need to be able to, and if there were no places to get food, I would need to be able to grow food. I would need to be able to obtain water, get water. All right, you know, I get it. That's very, you know, caveman-esque right now for many of us right now. I'm not even pushing here, but I'm saying, these are all skills that people in past generations accounted for as being very important. If they have these, it unlocked the world. If they could build economies of scale on this, it can unlock the world. If you don't have these and you go to these places where a city is not providing all of this for you, it becomes very challenging. Some people in some third world countries spend, you know, multiple days of their week just trying to get clean water. That does not sound like a good ROI on my time right there. I mean, so I get it. There's some sort of balancing act here. But if we understand we need to have shelter, we need to have food, we need to have security, some people build a lifestyle around this. Some people move to a less populated area where land is cheap and they get a homestead. They create a business from a homestead. My brother is actively looking at applying at a homestead this summer where he can learn the skills of farming over the course of a year in a very natural, organic way so that he can have this, right? And he's going to be able to live for free in exchange for work, but he's going to learn this skill set while he is there. So it's like rumor board in exchange for this type of information. Go live on a homestead for a year, farm the land, get taught the skill set, and then he'll have that skill set when he wants to do it on his own down the road. He's actually putting energy into acquiring this underlying skill set. And other people recognize the value of maybe being able to hunt. It seems so bizarre here in Richmond, but I promise you, in most places around the world, hunting is a very valuable skill set. Farming is a very valuable skill set. So, okay, that's the Maslow's hierarchy of needs. How does education fit into this, right? We just said we spend 30% of our lives in the educational model. And ultimately, the educational model feeds us into college. For 90% of the people that go through the educational model, pre-K, kindergarten, you know, elementary school, middle school, and high school, it is a feeder system to give those individuals the best opportunity of getting into a college. And then at college, they say, well, why do you go to college? Well, we go to college to learn a profession. We go to college for socialization, to learn how to be an adult. We go to college for life experience. We go to college, and this is the big one, right? We go to college to learn how to learn. And this is the one place I agree. It is very important for us as individuals living our life of 70 to 85 years to learn how to learn. Learn how to learn. That is a critical life skill. Brad, first of all, I just said, all right, that's ultimately, and not just college, it's the educational experience. Did I accurately summarize with those four things? Life experience, get a profession, socialization, learn how to learn. Are those the four big reasons that people go to college?
Yeah, I mean, learn how to learn is clearly the one that jumps out to me. I suspect, if I could read your mind where you're going with this, is that it's not a prerequisite to learn how to learn in an institution. I mean, there are many people that self-educate that, I mean, especially now with the internet, with Google, with YouTube, I mean, you can learn essentially anything. But yeah, I think in many of, you know, our/your, you know, anti-college things, and I am certainly coming around to this, I think it might be lost, and I hope nobody's mishearing us, that we think that education isn't important, or that learning how to learn, or understanding what important and what true sources of information, all of these things, like that, those aren't important. Nothing could be further from the truth. I mean, I idolize people like Warren Buffett and Charlie Munger, who, frankly, it doesn't sound like they have all that interesting lives, but what they do is, man, they learn all day long, even in their 90s. I mean, this is what these guys do. They sit around and they read. And to me, it's that concept of the talent stack that we've talked about so many times. That is really where learning, at least in my own experience, in my own life, where it's benefited me the most, is you just read random things. You try to learn a little bit about everything, and then you can make connections, right? You see totally disparate sources of information or people in your life or whatever coming up with similar themes, and you say, oh, wow, something's going on here. I need to pay more attention to this. Maybe I had a blind spot. And then you can learn all you want, learn as much or as little as you want. And I think, you know, we talk a lot about limiting beliefs, Jonathan, and maybe one of my limiting beliefs is I'm never going to be a world-class expert at anything. I don't have the dedication. I'm not smart. You know, all these other nonsensical things. But at this point, I've actually taken that and flipped it and said, because I'm kind of a dilettante with all this stuff, I have a broader range of knowledge than the vast majority of people. And it allows me to make connections that a lot of other people can't. So my knowledge is not super deep on a lot of these topics. And I've come to grips with that, because what I value is learning new things. Like, I love, Jonathan, I love learning new things. I mean, we've talked about this even with, you know, the whole world of like blockchain and NFT and cryptocurrency. Like, I'm still not like a full convert on, you know, this, the cryptocurrency, et cetera, but I'm fascinated by this world that millions upon millions of people believe in so much and are dedicating their lives to build. And like, that to me is interesting, even if I take no action on it. Like, that is something that's worth learning about. And the Brad from 2 years ago would have said, oh, this is a joke. This is just made up nonsense, et cetera, right? It's how can you apply some curiosity, right? How can you look at your life and say, hey, I want to learn just that little bit more. So I am constantly learning. I think that's, I find that fun. I find that one of the joys of life personally.
But what is very interesting, I want to point it out there. So we just said we go to college to learn how to learn. And you went to college, but the Brad of 2 years ago would have had no interest in this. But the Brad now is curious. You know, the Brad now is very interested in learning everything that he doesn't know that he doesn't know. But the Brad that graduated from college came out and just was like, well, I guess, you know, I got a profession. Let me be good at this profession. And it's interesting to say, I wonder how many of us are so exhausted by the gauntlet that we've come through, elementary, middle, high school, college, endless exams and tests, knowledge for the sake of passing the exam, not knowledge for the sake of knowledge. Say, I don't have capacity to learn anything new, to experiment with anything. I just got to be good at my profession and start paying down my student loan debt. Brad of 2 years ago wasn't curious. Brad of today has the bandwidth and space to say, well, what do I want to do with my time? And let me just point out the difference. Maybe Brad of 2 years ago, I don't think that's really accurate. I would have said Brad of 5 years ago, Brad of 10 years ago. But I would say, does financial independence give us a cheat sheet for those of us that may not have been predisposed to this, right? We would have just followed in that old script, but now we do have a little bit more time. We feel like we can take a little bit more risk. Not everything needs to have a profit motive. Not everything needs to pay down the student loan debt. And now maybe do we flex just a little bit? I can do what I want. What do I want to do? What do I want to learn?
Hey, this is Andrew from the Choose FI team. I hope you're enjoying the show. We're going to get right back to it after these quick messages.
I think one of the hallmarks of the FI community is we think a little bit differently. And I think that is a beautiful thing. And I mean, Jonathan, I don't think when you're describing there, like, you know, the person who's maybe burned out at 22, they've spent their whole lives, you know, trying to get all this information, get a job, be successful, whatever. I'm not sure that they're necessarily like closed off to learning. I think it's just that they feel like they've made it. And this is the narrative. And hey, I got my job. Right. I made it. Right. Maybe I can, you know, I need to stay employed. Maybe I can learn new things. But really, at its essence, I mean, life is about incentives. And for most of us, the incentive is to not get fired. And, you know, learning some random new thing about something in a totally different field doesn't really aid that goal of not getting fired. So I think for me, to your point, it allows us that little bit of space. And I think when you have some money saved up, when you're not stressed all the time, and let's be perfectly clear, you know, we're talking from a position of power, of strength, and of good fortune here, that you and I can, and many of us in the FI community can take a step back and we can have some time. We're not in that scarcity mindset. We're not working two or three jobs a week or a day or whatever it is, right? To just reach those main aspects of Maslow's hierarchy of needs. We're fortunate to be beyond that, putting that aside for now. I mean, because that I could almost hear some pushback on that, but clearly those are the essential things and you have to do what you have to do to take care of them, obviously. But then when you can move beyond that, when you can be in a position to save money, when you can be in a position to focus on what matters in your life, then you have that little bit of space, just that one little step back to, hey, what do I want to do? What do I want to learn? Where do I see my life going? Right? For so many people, Jonathan, I think, you know, that person I'm describing, that person you're describing, they're not looking at where is my life going because they're trying to get through the day. They're trying to get through paying the bills that week or that month. And obviously, I sympathize with that point of view. I mean, clearly, like we're talking about with this hierarchy of needs, you need to take care of that. So once you've taken care of that, then you can learn new skills. And you can, like we've talked about many times, you can try to earn more money. You can upskill. You can get certifications, right? You can network. You can increase, you know, all of these things that we've talked about over hundreds of episodes. You can negotiate your salary, which so many people have listened to episodes of Choose a FI and taken concrete skills to say, hey, this is the exact script that I can use to get a $5,000 or $10,000 or $20,000 raise. And I mean, Jonathan, I've received hundreds upon hundreds of emails of people who have done that. And that is just that little step back of saying, okay, I can take a breath and I can figure out, what do I want my life to look like from a position of strength? Does that mean, hey, I need to go to a different company and I need to negotiate my salary? Does that mean I can go into my current boss with options, knowing that even if the worst that happened, they fired me on the spot, which is not going to happen, right? I mean, for in 999 out of 1,000 cases or more, that's not going to happen, very simply. But just worst case scenario, right? You have to game out worst case scenario. If you have money saved up, if you have that runway, if you have 6, 9, 12 months of runway or more, and you have skills, you don't have to worry anymore. You're not at that scarcity mindset. And I think that is one of the most immediate benefits of FI, is not having to fear for your entire life crumbling after 30, 60, or 90 days if you lost your job in any capacity. Obviously, I'm talking this kind of weird situation where, you know, you're negotiating salary and you randomly lost your job, which again is not going to happen. But, you know, for most of us, it's what if somebody asks you to do something at your job that you're not comfortable with, or it's unethical or whatever, or you're just in a dead end job, or you're doing work that you absolutely hate. You don't want to get out of bed every morning. All right. Well, because you've been on the path to FI and you've been saving money, you have options now. I mean, that, what more could you ask for to be able to take action to make your life better and immediately see it get better? I mean, that is at the heart of saving money from day one, from taking action from day one.
When you were going through that, I was just thinking, what are those like big pillars or decisions or places that we could make a decision, that we could analyze, that we could be introspective, that we could be a little bit creative, and would open up the door to where we want to forge our own path? And I think the first one is, and you were talking about, we were talking about this a little earlier, this learn how to learn being the big thing that you attribute to college. But notice how we put that on college and not necessarily on high school, middle school, and elementary, even though obviously, if we're not sending our kids to elementary, middle school, and high school to learn how to learn, something has gone off the rails. But we just kind of, in this vacuum, both of us said it out loud, and other people probably would say, oh yeah, maybe I did kind of, you know, go there. We thought about college as the place where you go to college to learn how to learn. In reality, we have carved out the first third of our life to learn how to learn, plus maybe socialization. learn how to learn plus socialization plus get a job, right? And as I'm at this inflection point for right now as a parent, you know, thinking about my own life and now thinking about, all right, my kid's life, with the benefit of knowing all the other options that I've seen people in this community make, I'm thinking, all right, with the path my kids are about to be on, 4 and 2 years old, and maybe there's a tiny a tinge of urgency here because my wife is telling me about applying to various preschools and how we're going to be late to apply to a preschool or a kindergarten. And if we don't get in this time, then there's not going to be room or something like that. And I'm like, they need to learn how to learn. Learn how to learn. Every, you know, kids need to learn how to know. That's going to require reading, arithmetic, basic knowledge, learning how to do searches, but they need to just be hungry to learn information. And I was thinking about people in our community that have made a different choice. Brandon Pierce, long time ago, this is episode 44. We should probably reach back out to him, see how he and his family are doing. Into the Wind was the episode. He really brought us the concept, although I don't think he piloted it, the concept of unschooling. Sounded so radical at the time. Now, with the benefit of a couple of years of hindsight in my end and my kids getting a little closer, his kids know how to learn because their whole educational model has been learn how to learn. Tell us what you're interested in. Go learn that. That's episode 44. Our Rich Journey made the choice to take their kids. You know, their kids are the same age as your kids, Brad, and they went to Portugal. And their kids are learning how to learn there in a completely different school system. Chad Carson and his family figured out a way to do something similar in Ecuador. Into the Wind, Brandon Pierce was in somewhere in Mexico as well, I believe. So you're not going to rob, like, yes, all of us as parents want our kids to be able to learn how to learn, but there's not one path, and don't delude yourself into thinking. And then I think the other thing is like, all right, how much time do we need to dedicate to learning how to learn? Well, I think it's a lifetime process, but how much do we need to dedicate in this? The solid, very clear walls of the educational system. I have a feeling 20 years is, you know, 18 years, 16 years. That seems like a lot, really. So could that be tighter? I think what we'll see in the future is it will be less. And I think the reason it will be less is you're going to see people start to say, you know what? I don't need to win the attendance award. I don't need to win the attendance award. And people start grabbing on that. They flex their power. They realize they can do it. Their kids get amazing results. And then that trickles down. That trickles down. The next one down is mini experiments. Find ways to do mini experiments often where your risk of failure is just that you learn something that didn't work and you fail forward. The third takeaway for me is don't let your stuff own you. Don't let your debt own you. Don't, you know, if that means don't have as much debt, don't have debt, great. Let's not be tied down. Let's be able to be flexible. A lot of these things that are risk because you have so many obligations. You have financial obligations. You can't afford to not be able to make this payment on this really big mortgage. You can't afford to not be able to make the car payment, the student loan payment, the tuition that you're locked in for your kids at the private schools. Don't let your stuff, don't let your financial obligations own you. Understand the math. Figure out a way, if it means spend less, figure out how to earn more, figure out how to create passive income through investments. And then the fourth one here is like career flexibility. If you are in a job that has no flexibility, no bend, no yield, is that still going to be the case 5 years from now, 10 years from now? What could we do instead of just accepting that as a fact, realize that right now, if you were fired from your job today and had to start over in 6 months, you could be in a new job with remote flexibility and a totally new career path making 60 to 80K. Like, you should just know that. Like, that is the case. We've talked about that ad nauseum. That is a reality for people every single day. So I don't care where it is, that's your baseline and you could be making six figures, you know, within 3 years easily. All right. That is the world we live in now. Even if you're starting at zero, career flexibility. If you hate your job, if you feel locked in, if you haven't listened to anything we've said because, oh, but my career, why are you going to just let that be a reality when you could just adjust, make a pivot? And so, Brad, maybe you have some more stuff to go back to this, but I think, you know, if you were to tie the conversation that we've just had, you know, 40 something minutes in, to your kind of opening statements, what would you want someone to go away with?
Yeah, Jonathan, I think to me, it's comes back to those questions you ask yourself. And are you making choices or are you just kind of following a path, even if you think that path is ideal? You know, I mean, I think about our own life and how much of it is that Laura and I grew up in a suburban area, that we lived in the same area for 18 plus years. We went to the same elementary, middle, high school with the same kids in our respective districts. And that was our life. And coincidentally, right or not, that's the life we set up for our girls. And Laura and I were just talking about this yesterday. We were talking about sleepaway camps and how some of her friends who she remembers who went to 8 or 9 weeks of sleepaway camp in the summer coincidentally are sending their kids to 8 or 9 weeks of sleepaway camp. And it's like you make these decisions based on, hey, my parents did this and I had a great life, right? So now that I'm the parent, I'm going to make that decision for my kid. But again, what is the opportunity cost? What are you giving up? And it's interesting that you brought up Average Journey because, yeah, they moved to Portugal. And we just had a great conversation with them when we interviewed them a couple years ago. And I remember even just talking about swim clubs. I think Christina said that her daughter is in a local swim club there. That's one of their significant activities. And, you know, what's one of the things that are keeping us here in Richmond, as ridiculous as it is? It's our daughter's swim clubs. Like, I mean, I know that sounds silly, right? As I say it out loud, I know it's silly. There are tens of thousands of swim clubs across the world. But again, that's the life that we lived. I played on the same soccer team with the same kids for 10 years, right? And my girls are going to grow up going to the same local swim club for 13, 14 years. And I know as I'm saying the words, it sounds silly, because then I see, Jonathan, like we always talk about, the world runs on these stories, right? And you can see yourself in people who are similar to you, right? And have maybe made a slightly different choice. And that's why I love the Average Journey story, because it's us, right? It's my family. It's a family with two daughters who their kids are into swimming. They were passionate about travel and moving potentially, and Portugal, which is actually on the top of my list with Laura. And we haven't pulled the trigger, and they did. And they're living an amazing life. And that is really cool, I find, that I can follow them. I can ask them questions. I can, even if I didn't know them, even if we hadn't interviewed them, I could ask them a question on their blog or on their YouTube channel or something. And just seeing somebody else living that life after you've asked the question, I think that's really inspiring. It's inspiring to me. And again, like we always talk about, do you leave these episodes emboldened to take action? Because Jonathan, otherwise we're wasting our time, right? I mean, I hope this is somewhat entertaining, but at the end of the day, I hope people leave here taking action. And what my action is going to be is I already Googled, they have a course on how to move to Portugal. I kid you not. They literally have a course. So I'm going to share this with Laura and we're going to take a look at this.
Whoa, I wasn't even expecting. I wasn't going to ask you to take action, but I was thinking about this. Like, let's say in an alternate universe, 2 years from now, Brad is living in Portugal. Like, just think about this. What is probably the difference? He probably reached out to Our Rich Journey and had one conversation with a real family whose decisions made sense to them that are beyond happy with their choice. That's it. That's the difference between Brad right now telling me how he could never leave and how his daughter's happy in swim class and they want to disrupt their life, and Brad 2 years from now living in Portugal. Let me tell you the difference. The one path is Jonathan is a pharmacist, and the other path is Jonathan, you know, co-hosting Choose FI 4 years later with Brad. The difference is Jonathan heard Brad on a podcast, reached out and got lunch with Brad and talked about it out loud. And then Brad held Jonathan accountable one message later, a month later. And that is why we are here now. The difference with the one person Brad talked about, that family that's been wanting to move but didn't, they joined a group because of Brad's accountability. They asked a question and suddenly what was a scary unknown that was nagging on their shoulder, but because they couldn't sort it, they weren't going to look any farther. Now there's some form of accountability, and their odds of making this life choice have dramatically changed. So think about that common framework for yourself. Whatever prompted you, we talked about some big ideas, whatever it was that stuck with you, what was the common link? They didn't just let the idea die. They reached out to someone. Maybe they went to a camp by and they said, has anybody else done this? What am I missing? Maybe they joined a local group and asked them there. Maybe they reached out, physical contact. So increasing your zone of awareness. You already did that. You heard this episode. You went deeper to find someone that had made that choice. They've already done the hard part. You just follow in their footsteps, right? Learn from their experiences. And then they did it. You know, you gotta have a way of holding yourself accountable and moving forward. Think about that. You're not as far away from that one decision that will dramatically change your life as you think. You don't need to do everything we mentioned here, but don't take anything as, even if it seems like a fact right now, it doesn't necessarily have to be 1 to 2 years ago. You have agency. Your life, it's not a picture, it's a movie. And you get to make a choice today. You get to make a choice tomorrow. You get to slowly move yourself in a direction through the aggregation of marginal gains to open up the world. Don't just reclaim your golden years. That's my biggest problem. That's my one dogmatic thing. And that's what financial independence gives us. We are not okay with just unlocking our golden years. We want to unlock our best years. We want to reclaim our time. We want to take a look at the bandwidth that affords us, critically analyze what composes our day-to-day activities in our life and say, how do I want to use my most precious non-renewable resource, my time? I hope that this episode has challenged you. I hope that maybe in some cases it's made you a little angry, hopefully not at me, but just, or at Brad, but just in general, just like, you're right. I need to question this. I need to have a conversation. I hope you take action. And even more than that, if you do, I hope you send Brad an email. I hope you let him know what action you took. You know, what conversation did this prompt?
And that's funny because I was just going to say, you never know where that inspiration is going to come from, right? And that email you talk about, I send out a weekly email every week on Tuesday with a couple of things that I'm thinking about or going on in my life or just things that I've come across that I think are going to really, really help. But most importantly, I share five or six actions that the community has taken, that individual people who wrote back to me from the prior week, what they've done to make their life better. And like we said, the world runs on stories and you might see, oh, wow, that person took that action. I can do that too. So yeah, go to chooseify.com/subscribe. That's the quickest way to get immediately on the email list. And Jonathan, you talked about the local groups. Sometimes it's just having that one conversation with somebody, no matter if you've been in the FI community for days, months, or years. It could be that one conversation that sparks something, that sparks starting a new business, investing in real estate, traveling the world, getting a new job, trying to negotiate for a larger salary, whatever it may be, right? Because you see someone in your real life, in your local area doing that. So chooseify.com/local. And you can find one of 300 plus local groups all across the world.
All right, my friends, the fire is spreading. We'll see you next time as we continue to go down the road less traveled.